Megan, let's call our third case.
Ms. Tanya Dahoney arguing for the state and Mr. Raymond Wynn arguing for appellate.
Let's proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I'm here representing the state on a state's appeal out of a county court. The matter that was suppressed in this case was blood that was drawn pursuant to search warrant. And obviously this is a popular issue today. This anticipated argument involves something we all know very well, the Fourth Amendment. And one thing I would like you to keep in mind as I talk about this case, this is actually a state appeal where we have very specific findings of fact and conclusions of law entered by the trial judge. In fact, his fact findings were done in a narrative format, and then there was a list of conclusions of law that Judge Mills entered in this case. Now, as I said, this is a Fourth Amendment issue, and we've all studied and read about the Fourth Amendment for years, and there are two guiding principles that are very important for this court to consider about the Fourth Amendment. The first of those is that the Fourth Amendment prefers warrant-based seizures. And in fact, there are findings and conclusions that pertain to that in this case. The second principle is that is something that I've argued to this court many, many times. It's one of my favorite sayings. The linchpin of the Fourth Amendment is reasonableness, and it is really that simple, something handed down years ago by our founding fathers, reasonableness.
So is the state's position that 724 of the Transportation Code does not even apply to this case as opposed to what Judge Mills found?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It's conclusions of law 8 through 13 following the Beeman case, which is controlling precedent over this court and, of course, the trial court. And, of course, that would in part show how reasonable the officers were in this case. One of the principles that I suggested is important here because the officers were following Court of Criminal Appeals precedent from 2002 in securing a warrant to seize this blood. Now, the findings in fact and conclusions of law on reasonableness are very, very important for this court to consider. The officers in this case were found to have used medically accepted procedures. Judge Mills expressly stated that in his narrative at page 2.
Is that a fact finding or a conclusion of law?
That's a fact finding because he heard the witnesses, specifically Dr. Del Principe, but also the two officers who had gone through the course, and he listened to them describe what they had studied, what their experience was, and there was vigorous cross and obviously direct setting out what the protocol was from the expert and from the two officers. So, yes, that's a fact finding in this case, and so that's entitled to great deference.
Okay, well, let's back up a second. You just said, I believe, that your position is 724 doesn't apply.
That's correct.
Well, but in your brief on page 5, you say, beginning with the framework utilized in an Arizona program, the doctor developed a curriculum for the police department in order to allow officers in that department to conduct the blood draws as a qualified technician, which means that I guess he was operating under 724 does apply, and we're going to make these people qualified technicians. So we got 724 doesn't apply.
They gave them a title, Your Honor. A qualified technician is not defined, and it gave Dr. Del Principe a guideline. And it's clear, though, that the Beeman case says 724 does not apply. But the law enforcement in this case was certainly aware that there would be someone contesting this. And so it's often a good idea and prudent practice to pursue both avenues.
Okay.
The fallback position would be if it applied,
okay,
and if this court decided to overrule Beeman, then 724 was complied with.
Right.
Now, we're chuckling as we say that, but attorneys argue alternative arguments all the time, and of course, in preparation for setting up this program, alternative arguments would be contemplated. So that would.
What impact does it have on the state that the officers apparently did not even first ask for a breath test?
Well, that's a policy under that was decided by the legislature. The officers are entitled to choose which type of sample under 724 in implied consent. And it was testified to by the officers that this particular police agency decided long ago that they were going to only offer blood. And that decision probably seems to go hand in hand with the fact that this agency has come up with this protocol and program in order to get blood draws, because the agencies clearly, and the testimony showed, they're battling the rising number of refusals as people are prosecuted for DWIs and getting away with DWIs with impunity when they refuse and keep the evidence that technically they've impliedly consented to give the state, and which they're entitled to refuse. But they're entitled to refuse their consent under Chapter 724, but not a search warrant.
Doesn't it seem like it's reasonable that they should first be offered a lesser intrusion when you're looking at the Fourth Amendment, whether it be by breath or urinalysis? I mean, we've got these two other methods by which to determine a level of one's intoxication.
I'm trying to think of one of the cases. The United States Supreme Court, and obviously the Court of Criminal Appeals, too, has repeatedly said that the fact that there are other, it's not other reasonable alternatives, but other reasonable means. Gates is one of the cases that talks about that. Just because something could be done properly another way does not undermine the validity of the police action. You don't look at the scope of all the other things that could have been done, different ways searches could have been conducted, et cetera. You look at what the objective facts are here. So while, yes, you can say, Judge, that there might be other ways to obtain that evidence, officers have been given that choice statutorily, and at that point, the implied consent did apply if the person was consenting to under the blood test. But when they chose not to consent, that's when the consent issue is mooted under Beeman. So, but there's a clear line of cases from the United States Supreme Court that says you don't have to look at other things officers could have done that might have been better when you're looking at it from a Monday morning quarterbacking sort of position. You look at what was done, and it's objectively reasonable in this case for this police agency to offer blood and to offer blood in this manner and only blood. I'm not aware of any case that undermines that ability for the officer to choose that, and there are certainly cases that support that.
Honey, is it your position, is it the state's position, that Officer Stinson and Officer Burkert were qualified medical personnel making this draw in a medical environment?
Well, you know, Justice Meyer, this is my first time to argue in front of you. That makes me beg a question. It's interesting that that's one of the arguments put forward, because technically, if this was truly a medical draw, then we would be looking at the Court of Criminal Appeals decision in Hardy, and the defendant wouldn't have any sort of standing to contest it. That's not the case. We've said all along, and the testimony showed, this was evidence gathering by law enforcement officers. They were trained to gather this evidence, and they were trained with medical procedures. So, you know, it's in the same way that we have some facts that might include a conclusion of law or vice versa. The older I get, the more I find that some things aren't black and some things aren't white. It's somewhere in between. It's gray. That's the same that would apply here.
So what would your term be for the level of qualification to draw blood that was met by Officer Stinson and Officer Burkert?
They became trained venipuncture officers.
Technicians?
Yeah, technicians could be. We're picking nomenclature out of a hat if we give them a label. I think that we are getting away, if we do that, from the Fourth Amendment reasonableness standard. And in this situation, a police agency from top down went through an obvious, thought-out protocol to set up a program here. So while they did get a certificate, which is introduced into evidence, and a little card, and it says qualified technicians, that's a label that I'm not sure really matters.
Okay, so is the state's position that the Supreme Court authority does not require that a compulsory blood draw be conducted by medical personnel in a medical environment?
If you're contemplating the last paragraph of Schmerber, no, I believe that that decision says that it has to be an accepted medical practices, and that's how I read reasonableness, which is the first sentence in that last paragraph of Schmerber. And in Schmerber, of course, we're dealing with a warrantless situation, which shows the gold standard applied here with a warrant, not just an off-the-cuff decision by an officer, but something that was sanctioned by a neutral judge, too. But yes, I believe that reasonableness is the linchpin of the Fourth Amendment, and the next sentence says that it was done according to accepted medical practices in Schmerber. And then, you know, judges are human, too, and even those on the Supreme Court threw in something that looks like an advisory opinion, which you kind of tend to try not to do that if you're writing opinions from the bench, but that's what it says when it's an off-the-cuff sort of a thing there that perhaps is out of date 40-plus years later. We certainly have accepted medical practices. Our trial court found each and every witness credible, and one of those witnesses was an emergency medical physician with amazing experience, multiple decades, director of an ER. He said this was similar to what would be done in the hospital, so you can label these officers qualified technicians or venipunctures or pseudo-phlebotomists or any of those sort of terms, but what they did was reasonable because it was done according to accepted medical practices. And I think there's another little prong to that, Judge, from Schmerber. They mentioned that there's one concern, and the concern really, again, it's that gray. It doesn't concern the label, but it concerns what they are looking at as far as the risk of pain and injury. And Dr. Del Principe, again, found to be credible in this hearing by the trial court, said that the accepted medical practices utilized here discounted that risk of pain and injury. So that complies with Schmerber's dictates. And again, Schmerber was an officer who had a compelled blood draw on a misdemeanor DWI offender in California in the 60s, and we're looking at a situation that was sanctioned by a trial court with a search warrant.
Is this course developed by the doctor post-2002 Beeman, or do you know the timing of it?
I'm trying to remember if that's in the record, Your Honor, and I believe yes, because Beeman would have been the springboard, but I'm not thinking that exact testimony is in the record, so I'm not trying to step outside the record, and I apologize if I am on that. You know, one of the things, I wanted to answer a couple statements that were made in the defense brief, and one of those was that, was just briefly about good faith, and correct, Mr. Welchel did not argue good faith below. But I wanted to cite this court to Castaneda, and with leave of the court, Justice McCoy, I'll submit a letter brief that has an additional cite. But Castaneda is a Court of Criminal Appeals case from 2003. It's Castaneda, like the little musical instruments. And threshold issues are subsumed, that are subsumed in an issue and here in Fourth Amendment, and obviously U.S. v. Leon, Fourth Amendment law, good faith law, apply even when not preserved. In fact, there's a case right now, Moreno, at the Court of Criminal Appeals that's on directed verdict authority of trial courts with that same issue before it. And Rizak, a famous, kind of infamous Court of Criminal Appeals case, has that same analysis. So I wanted to cite that case. But the main thing I wanted to address briefly is that the manner of intrusion here was reasonable. And in the brief, the defense said, we had no authority for these blood draws. And, well, we have authority for outside-the-box thinking by officers. And sometimes That's what's called for in law enforcement. And the case I wanted to cite this court to is Scott versus Harris, April 2007, United States Supreme Court. And I'll give you a letter with the cite so you don't have to write down all the numbers. But in that case, there was a high-speed chase. And it's not part of the protocol for officers to run people off the road when there's a high-speed chase. The United States Supreme Court judges got to – may I finish this thought? Or
finish your sentence.
Got to actually see the video of the high-speed chase and the officer deciding to use his bumper and run the person off – I can't recall if it's Scott or Harris – run them off the road, and unfortunately that person became a paraplegic. But the Supreme Court said that was reasonable under a Fourth Amendment objective reasonableness standard. And in this situation, we have officers with a protocol that's clearly put together in a program and then blessed with a judge's search warrant that was outside the box thinking to help save the traveling public, just like Scott versus Harris.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Reagan Wynn. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Mrs. Johnston.
Can have a three-sentence overrun.
I'm going to go ahead and apologize. I don't know if I have the flu or something else, but I am probably not going to be terribly coherent today. Our position in this case is clear. Police-inflicted blood draws conducted at the police station are unreasonable in violation of the Fourth Amendment. And that's not me telling you that. That's the Supreme Court telling you that in Schmerber, as clearly as they possibly could. And all this talk about they got a warrant and that's the gold standard. Schmerber makes it clear that the warrant, or whether it's warrantless, in other words, the justification for getting the blood, is not the end of the Fourth Amendment analysis. The analysis includes whether or not, quote, the means and procedures employed to draw the blood are reasonable. And when you say that Schmerber, well, they just threw that out there and it was an advisory opinion and so forth, you have to look at the history of Schmerber to see that they meant what they said. If you look at Brythrop, which is cited in Schmerber, and it's talked about in the Lefebvre treatise that I cited in my brief, Brythrop, the guy gets in a wreck and is unconscious in the hospital. Police officer looks at the doctor and says, hey, take a vial of his blood for me. Doctor does it. Supreme Court comes in, and they said that was okay. It didn't violate the Fourth Amendment. But notice what they said. When done, as in this case, under the protective eye of a physician, certainly the test as administered here would not be considered offensive by even the most delicate. And then if you look at footnote 5 of that opinion, they talk about what happened at oral argument. And at oral argument, they've got the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico up there saying, all right, are you telling us that when y'all take blood from people, you do it in a hospital with a doctor? And the Attorney General of New Mexico says, of course we do. We wouldn't do it any other way. And they make a note of that. And that is the basis that you have to read Schmerber in light of that. Schmerber can't be more clear. They say it has to be done by medical personnel in a medical environment. Now, look at the words the Supreme Court chose to use. They didn't say somebody with training. And they certainly didn't say a police officer with training. They said medical personnel. I would submit to you that medical personnel is an inherently neutral term. It implies someone that is in the business of providing care. And that for the Supreme Court, if you're going to tie somebody down and stick a needle in their arm, for that to be reasonable, it needs to be done by somebody who is in the business of providing care instead of by some cop who is in the business of trying to get evidence to convict you of DWI. When you have police officers doing this, they are in an inherently adversarial position to the patient. It is certainly not unreasonable to think that a person who apparently is supposed to be intoxicated or we're not going through this process, which by law means they've lost the normal use of their mental faculties. Is it really unreasonable to think someone like that is going to resist a police officer where they might not resist medical personnel? And what does medical environment mean? Did the Supreme Court say in a clean and sanitary place? No. They said a medical environment. And I would submit to you that a medical environment is an inherently neutral term, and it implies a place where citizens would go to receive medical treatment.
But in some circumstances, the cases seem to acknowledge that that might not be reasonable because there might be exigent circumstances or the lapse of time, which the case law supports a staleness argument.
Well, in this case, we don't have any facts in the record to justify that. And I would submit to you that based on what we know about this program, it wouldn't be any harder to haul them down to Arlington Memorial where Dr. Del Principe is and get this done than it is to haul them down to the Dal Worthington Gardens Police Department. And if you had a genuine exigency circumstance, well, then maybe on a case-by-case basis, that would be okay. But that's not what we're talking about. They have a program in place where every single human being that gets arrested for DWI in Dal Worthington Gardens, they are going to ask you for a sample of your blood with a DIC-24, and if you don't give it to them, they're going to hold you down and stick a needle in your arm. And it's not going to be a doctor that does it. It's going to be the police officers that arrested you.
Well, the police officers that arrested you, all of them have gone through this program?
Your Honor, that's one of those things that I do not want to speak about. I know for purposes of our record, the two involved with this have certainly been through Dr. Del Principe's program.
Well, if we're not bound by 724, which I'm not sure you can agree with or not, but, you know, it has that provision about EMTs not being medical or technically qualified. If we're just going under the Fourth Amendment, is an EMT qualified to do this?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that a police officer, Judge Mills found that these officers were not acting as medical personnel. And that's in his conclusions of law, but I would submit to you that what it really is a finding of fact. They weren't acting as medical personnel. There is nothing in the record that lets you think this was somehow medically necessary or anything else. They were clearly acting to obtain evidence. They clearly went through this venipuncture training so that they could obtain evidence. They are not acting as medical personnel. And that's why I think the words the Supreme Court chose to use 40 years ago are important. Again, they didn't say qualified person who's been through a class or someone who knows how to draw blood safely. They said medical personnel in a medical environment. And that's what the Fourth Amendment requires.
So y'all are in agreement, 724 doesn't apply.
I am not in a position to concede that. I will tell you that Beeman is certainly problematic for us. I would say that here's the one thing about Beeman. Beeman is about warrantless or consent. So Beeman is about the justification for whether or not you get the blood. And Beeman does not on its face directly address the issue of whether or not the procedural mechanisms in place for the draw should apply. Now, obviously, the statute says blood draw under this chapter, which I realize is problematic for me. But I would point this out to you. Since we had the hearing in this case, our legislature got together for 6 months, and they drastically amended 724.017. They added all kinds of new offenses. Now they can do mandatory blood draws if you had a wreck and there was bodily injury instead of just serious bodily injury. They can do a mandatory blood draw if there was a child under the age of 15 in the car. They can do a mandatory blood draw if they think you got two priors, so it's a felony DWI. They can do a mandatory blood draw if they think you got a prior conviction for intox assault or intox manslaughter. I told you I wasn't going to be able to pull up the words very well today. But they amended that statute. And notice what else they did. They specifically gave civil immunity to medical personnel who draw blood at the bequest of the police. They specifically did that. They said, if you do it and you do it with using medical procedures, you're not going to be liable. And they even went so far to say, and the fact that the person doesn't consent doesn't really matter. You're still not liable. I think that is our legislature, the people of Texas acting to their legislature, that's their way of telling you how they think all this ought to be done. And that goes to the reasonableness calculus. and frankly, to approve of this program that the chief of police at Dalworthington Gardens came up with some doctor from Arlington Memorial Hospital. It's legislating from the bench. It's what it is, because you've got no statutory framework in place. You've got no regulatory framework in place, and Judge Mills specifically found that in his findings of fact. You've got no oversight whatsoever of this program, and for y'all to put your stamp of approval on it is, in effect, saying, okay, this is all okay. And that's a job for the legislature. That's a job for the people of Texas acting through the legislature. And you know what the one thing they didn't do when they amended 724 this last session? They certainly didn't put in there that if you take a police officer and give him venipuncture training, he can draw the blood. And they could have fixed that with five words in the statute. Good faith, I want to briefly address that. They didn't argue it below. They certainly can't argue it now. But more importantly, good faith inherently talks about the issue of probable cause. I mean, if you read Leon, it says that police officers, when they got a warrant in their hand, they can believe there's probable cause because some judge signed off on it. And our statute talks about a warrant issued upon probable cause, our good faith statute. It has nothing to do with the manners and means used to execute the warrant. And as I said, the Supreme Court's made it clear, when you're talking about doing some sort of invasive medical procedure on somebody, and I realize the Supreme Court's told us that blood draws aren't that unusual or uncommon, but they still do specifically say there are these other Fourth Amendment issues when you go to stick a needle in somebody's arm. When you, I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. Well, I frankly lost my train of thought, Your Honor. In the end analysis, this is a really important case. Y'all are going to be the first Texas court that's going to address this. And I think that also bears looking at. It's in the brief. Every single case in Texas that I can find where the police officers got a blood draw from somebody was done by a nurse or a doctor in some sort of clinic or hospital. At least there was one case, as I said out in the brief, there's one case where it doesn't say how it was done, so we don't know. But all the other cases, Beeman, they took him to the emergency room. They're all done at the hospital. I think there is a reason for that. I think the reason is because that's what's reasonable. And I will agree with Ms. Dehoney, the touchstone is reasonableness, but the Supreme Court has told you what reasonable is. It's medical personnel in a medical environment. Let me throw this out there to show further why this isn't reasonable. What happens if something goes wrong in this program? What happens if they break the needle off in her arm? If they're right and Beeman controls, well, then they've all got liability. They got civil liability because they don't get within the immunity statute passed by the legislature. But what do? I mean, what happens? We take them to the hospital at that point, I guess. You've got this set up where the police are doing this to people, and just like Ms. Johnson, I would submit to you a fair portion of the population is going to resist having the police officer that has just arrested them, handcuffed them, and stuffed them in the back of a police car, hold them down and stick a needle in their arm. And it's that simple. That is unreasonable. The Supreme Court has told you, the legislature acting in, if you believe Beeman, in another field concerning implied consent draws, has told you how they think it has to be done. And by the way, you know, Judge Mills' findings, they can't get around Judge Mills' findings that these guys are not qualified technicians under the statute. So if Ms. Johnston had consented to the blood draw, then we clearly win, which I would point out would be an absurd result. If she'd consented, we win because they're not qualified under the statute, but somehow the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply or doesn't require the same here. I guess that's really all I have to say. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First off, we're not talking about some cop. As you pointed out, Justice Livingston, We are talking about a police officer who was an intermediate EMT. So, yes, taking Chapter 724 out of it, we had someone who had done, according to the record, thousands of venipunctures and was very well qualified to do this procedure. So another reason this is reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. But, you know, if you look at Breithaupt, which I've never known how you say that case from the 50s that is discussed in Schmerber and Schmerber, both of them talk about the myriad times that blood draws, and both of those are 50s and 60s cases, are done and relied on in society. And if you think about how they are now, where you can go to your church and give blood, you can go to this courthouse and give blood, you can go anywhere and give blood routinely, the times have changed, and we have learned how to utilize accepted medical practices under different scenarios. And again, I will repeat, it is inappropriate for us to look at all of the woulda, coulda, shoulda types of ways this could have been done, whether it's rushing people to Arlington Memorial or taking them to Dr. Del Principe or any of those. The test here was what happened in this case based on these findings and conclusions. Was it objectively reasonable under the Fourth Amendment? And all those other things don't matter.
What about medical environment? We've beat on pretty well medical personnel.
Well, the trial court specifically found that the protocol that included a checklist for cleaning the room was according to accepted medical practices, and that, in fact, that procedure had been properly applied. It was cleaned before this. So there was discussion from Dr. Del Principe that it was as clean as places in the hospital, which, of course, his testimony is deemed credible by the trial judge. So, yes, that's...
Well, cleanliness doesn't necessarily encompass medical environment.
Well, medical personnel...
Rooms may be immaculate, but they're certainly not a medical environment.
Medical personnel treat people on the side of the road based on exigency.
That's not medical environment.
You're right, but it's accepted medical practice for an EMT to do that when it's necessary.
No, but we're trying to focus here on the words from this case, medical personnel and medical environment. And if you're going to deal with this case, how do you deal with that issue?
You train people, you give them a protocol, and you ask that they follow that protocol. Somewhat like a Daubert sort of analysis. You give them a technique and they set it out, and is it reasonable? Here the doctor testified that it was reasonably accepted medical practice. That's medical practice, not reasonably accepted police practice.
So the bottom line is, your view is that the police station in this situation was a medical environment.
The clean room that they used, yes, not the police station.
Would you please comment on the allegations of fact that are in the appellee's brief that in this circumstance that the defendant was secured by having her legs secured to the legs of the chair, securing one arm to the arm of the chair, and Officer Stinson held the other arm while Officer Burkhardt obtained the blood sample. What's reasonable about that?
Well, my response would be that it is unreasonable, and of course we have the penal code under 3803, which provides a Class A misdemeanor for trying to undermine or thwart a search or seizure and an arrest and a detention. But my case that I cited earlier, Scott versus Harris, which was the officer running the person off the road, and in the balance of governmental interest versus that suspect at that point, not even the level that we had with Ms. Johnston here at the seizure.
I'm having trouble getting a mental picture in my mind that that's a medical circumstance whenever we have those kinds of restraints necessary to just hold the defendant still enough to get a needle in her.
That was for her safety in order to get that, and actually that's what Schmerber allows, is compelled blood draw, and that's what they said from the 1966 case. Compelled blood draw in that situation without a warrant was proper. This is a compelled blood draw, no doubt about it.
Do you agree with the implication that this scenario that Dow Worthington Gardens uses is unique?
According to the record?
Well, it is implied that there are no other cases about this because there's no other cases where it happens at the police department.
Under Texas cases, I do not know of another one where there has been a police blood draw at this time.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Thank you for your excellent arguments, and your case is submitted.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals.